Right, hello and welcome to the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome back to the show Mr. Long Ball Football himself. I just thought of that on the spot. Barney's back. Barney, how you doing, mate? It's good to see you.
Oh, I'm very good. I'm very happy to be back. Yeah, I felt like I tried to come back for the Amarin episode. As if I was a... felt like I was been off a long time of an injury and then got injured in the warm-up with that one. But no, I'm back now, yeah. Might not be match fit, but I'm raring to go. Really happy to be back.
Yeah, I like that. Some good analogies there. Yeah, valiant attempt to get back on for the Amarin special, but it wasn't to be. That Tenerife hotel Wi-Fi let us down a bit.
Yeah.
But we've got belt and braces here because we've got the excellent Andrew on the show once again. Andrew, I mean, like I said last time, you're part of the furniture now. It's always a pleasure to have you on. So I did say before we recorded, as we'll come on to, I apologize, not the best week for Porto, but your expertise and presence is always appreciated.
No, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure to join the podcast and impart my slightly unhinged insights about this league. We love so much.
Yeah, perfect. And you have to forgive me. I am going to do what I've been forgetting to do every single week, which no one has been reminding me to do, and plug a few things very quickly before we start. And I should say, as always, if you do enjoy listening to the show, make sure you're subscribed on the podcast feed and you're following us on Twitter and all that good stuff. And I should give a good plug to the Patreon, which is going really well. As a reminder, it only costs £1 a month to sign up to the Patreon. We've got loads of great members already. We did one of our watch-alongs last week, which was really fun. We've been doing the Predictions League every single week, which everyone likes to get involved with, and we do a weekly bonus preview show which comes with the Patreon. And so yeah, if you're interested, if you've been listening to the show for a while, if you want to get involved even further, definitely consider that. And I referenced the Amarin special that we did a couple of weeks ago. That's still up on YouTube if you want to have a look at that. And I know that we did a whole show on it, but because we didn't get a chance to speak to these two gentlemen about the subject, I think it's worth touching on now. Amarin's moved to Manchester United because, as we were just discussing before we started recording, he's in Manchester as we speak. He's made the move. It's all finally happened. Barney, I'll come to you first just because I know you wanted to get involved in the last show and you had some stuff to say, but weren't able to. So, yeah, let us know just all your thoughts on that whole situation.
Yeah, it's hard to think of things to say that haven't already been said. I think perhaps looking at specifically put it from the point of view of the league, I mean, obviously he's a huge loss in that sense. Obviously the sort of the biggest managerial presence with Conceição leaving the end of last year, but also the more important, I'd say, the work he's done in the league and how he's completely transformed the sporting side, obviously. I think the biggest compliment I can give him is that he doesn't feel like that much of a loss. Forgive me, like, I'll try and explain that because obviously it's a huge loss, but like the squad has been built under him is just incredible. Like it really feels like there's so much depth. You can also see examples of players that are ready to fill the gaps. The departing players are prime example, Jokeres and Harder, like that process has already started. You know, you got, like, I think you can easily compare that to like the likes of Benfica and Porto, who have both lost key players in recent transfer windows, and it very much feels like their solution to losing those players is then to try and panic in the transfer market, right? That the players aren't already there to fill the gaps. It's very much a sort of a reaction from those two clubs, whereas with Sporting, it's felt like the squad building has been incredible. And so, although he's lost and obviously a great manager and a great his in-game management obviously improved as well, it still feels like Sporting are going to be in a very strong position. Another thing I wanted to say, which I was going to do on the Amarin special, but it's just I don't know what point I'm trying to make, but I was just thinking of a way of describing the situation that hasn't perhaps been said already. But Sporting are also very fortuitous because I felt like Aaron didn't get picked up earlier because of the system he plays, right? It's quite a specific system, and obviously we've seen across European football that, you know, there needs to be quite a lot of personnel changes to sort of implement that system if he is going to do it manually. But I feel that's why he hadn't got pinched earlier. But then I think that's always the same also applies to some of the players, right? There's, I think you look at the centre back situation with Inacio and Diomande, players who any other year would have been snapped up already by now, but because they play in his free at the back system, I think perhaps clubs were a little hesitant to pull the trigger on splashing the cash on some of those players. And then you look at Gyökeres as well, and how you look at Victor Osimhen, for example, who didn't get that move this summer. There's not enough money for clubs to splash the cash on him, for example. And even Pedro Gonçalves, who I think is such a unique player, and because he's so unique, you know, he's such a high quality player, a player who probably could do it in at a bigger league, but because he's so unique and what he offers, another like that's another example of like clubs not willing to take a gamble on it. And at the point I'm trying to make really is that, like, I'm not trying to discredit everything that Amarin's done, but I think the point I'm trying to make is that Sporting is so special this year because of all those little factors. Like, there's so many things that have gone right for them, if you see what I mean. Like, there's so many like elements to world football that have come into it. For example, the money for Gyökeres not being around, and the fact that clubs are a bit more hesitant to pick up players who play in such a specific system, that's why they've been able to keep everything for so long. And it was amazing to watch them this year. It was amazing to watch them in the Champions League last week. It was, you know, Amarin's obviously done an incredible job, but I think that what I'm trying to say is this is such a special team. It's such a special moment. I hope it can last out for the rest of the season. Obviously, Amarin's lost, and there's a bit of spark going to go, but I don't think we're going to see a team like this for a very long time. Like, this, if this is the end, and if this is the start of the end, you know, so many things have gone right for Sporting. Obviously, incredible performances from players, incredible performance for Amarin, and it's like, yeah, it's, yeah, it's just, yeah. I feel like we're going to be lucky. We're going to look back on this and be like, wow, that was a special, special team.
I think Sporting fans are already doing that very much so. And I think you make an excellent point that one of the biggest aspects of Amrim's legacy will be the fact that he's left the club in a significantly better place than where he found it, which I think is the understatement of the century, really. I mean, Andrew, what's your take on all? Because obviously, you know, it's a big move for a young manager. It's a well-deserved move, but there's a lot to take in.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few points to look at. I think Barney makes a good point about the being rigid with the three at the back, only wanting to play three at the back. I mean, the rumor is that Liverpool wanted him and they were interested in bringing him over before they got on a slot. But he said, look, it's three at the back or nothing. And they knew they didn't have the team for that. And there's probably a bit of that with other teams. I also think that as good as Almunia is, he's very, very good. But also there's a lot of other factors. They're a very good sporting organization, not sporting the club as in sporting like sport, right? They've done everything right. They've got Hugo Viana, who's everything he's done has kind of worked out, right? They've made the right decisions. They brought the right players in at the right time. They moved on certain players when they needed to. They could have easily just kept Sebastian Coach for another season. You know, he'd been such a big figure for them, but they knew it was sort of the right time. And I mean, he probably wanted to go as well, but there's factors where you sort of have to do the right things at the right time. And if you're always winning off the pitch, it's much easier to keep winning on the pitch. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's what they did very, very well. As for the size of the move, it's a huge move to go from Sporting to arguably still one of the biggest clubs in the world, you know, regardless of their sort of failure to win anything significant recently. It is still one of the biggest clubs in the world in terms of the eyes on the club every single week, the amount of criticism the managers and players come into all the time. The league itself, the Premier League, is way different to the Portuguese league, just in terms of intensity, in terms of pressure, all that kind of thing. So it is a big move, but he's a guy that you can tell he's very even keeled. He knows what he's talking about. He trusts himself and his system, which is why he never moves from it. He plays to his strengths, or he sets the team up to play to the strengths that he understands tactically. I'll be very interested to see how he deals with the media, because he has a reputation in Portugal for being quite chill and not sort of biting when they try to bait him into answers. And I want to see how he does in England, where the relationship is a bit more adversarial with the media, and see how he takes it, because he always seems to know what to say, and he says the right thing. He says, no, look, I'm not going to answer that at the right time. And I want to see if he's able to keep his cool like that, because lots of managers can't, and guys that have been doing it way longer than him. So I'd be interested to see how he deals with that. But as for his legacy in Portugal, I mean, he's a great coach. He's going to live long in the history for Sporting and for the league itself. And I agree with Barney. I don't think we'll see a team like this for a long time. The Jokeres thing is an interesting one, because even as good as he is, yeah, there isn't money for him. There's no club that really has that amount of money to pay for him. But it's also like he's going to be 27 soon. He only just kind of got good now. If you're dropping 100 million on someone around that age, and he's playing in a team that creates a load of chances and that play really well, that are a really well-oiled machine. But is he going to be able to do that in a team that maybe isn't that well-oiled? Do you know what I mean? And he's going to have to make things happen. I still think Gyökeres is very good, but it's just something to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. Just going back to your point on it being a different situation that Amorim's going into. I think the one thing that impressed me most in the plethora of interviews and speculation, all the stuff we saw about Amorim, the one thing that impressed me most that made me feel more confident about him taking on this transition was hearing, I think it was actually an interview in English with BT Sport, where he seemed to suggest, and obviously he's aware of Manchester United's situation, he knows that he's going to a club underperforming. He seemed to almost want to suggest that that was something that he was relishing because he wanted a change. And he definitely was very kind of open about the fact that he wanted a new challenge and that he was aware that it was going to be very different. And that in Portugal, he's only really tested in what, 4 to 6 games per season in the league. And that was something he wanted for his career and for his development, was to go into a new environment and be tested in new ways. And so I think in that sense, with his mentality, that kind of gave me a lot of confidence.
And I guess he kind of, when he got to Sporting, they were kind of underperforming, right? In a
That's a
different
great
way,
point. It's a great point.
but they were underperforming, and he got to go in with no pressure. Whereas Manchester United, whether they're underperforming or not, it's pressure right from day one. And we'll see how he deals with it. But he has dealt with that sort of taking an underperforming team and sort of bringing them back up. But all the other elements have to be just right. You have to have your sporting director make the right decisions. You have to be in that position that he's in. And he's also a good communicator, as we can tell. I mean, he basically has to get his message across in both English and Portuguese every week, because he's got players like Jokeres and Hummels and other players that he communicates with in English. So that's good. I think communication for that type of system, especially like the shock to the system that it's going to be for this Manchester United team, is very important. And I think he's got that.
Yeah, and just quickly, Andrew, we'll come back just on Sporting as well, because obviously new manager João Pereira has come in, and what you think about that? Because I mean, it was very clear that continuity was the most important thing. I mean, there was never any suggestion really that there was going to be some big name brought in, Abel or anyone like that. It was always going to be. I know. I think the Sporting fans maybe would have preferred like one of his assistants or something, but he's taken all the assistants to Manu, so it's João Pereira. I don't know anything about the league that Sporting B play, and I don't think his record is actually particularly amazing. But I think that's kind of beside the point, right? It's just about bringing someone in who knows the system, and it's continuity.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing. I saw a headline coming out of Portugal today, him saying in a press conference that what he doesn't want to be is just a copy of Amorim. Now, look, if you're going to copy someone, copy the best coach in the league, right? But fine, do whatever you want. But he said, look, he doesn't want to copy Amorim, but he plays the same system. From what I've read, he coaches in a very similar way, maybe a bit more intense, but it's very similar. So you were kept there to be the sort of Amorim stand-in for when this happened, because they knew it was going to happen. I mean, his release clause was 10 million. That's really low considering what they paid, when he came from Braga. So he knows that, and that's why he's there. So that sort of headline, I'm not sure what he was trying to do there, but it seems like it's more just to keep the ship going. They're at the top. They're doing well in the Champions League. He just needs to try and make the right decisions and keep everyone playing to their strengths and playing in the right positions.
And I definitely feel like, now Amorim's gone, he's old news, we can move on. Like, I feel like this João Pereira position is going to be one of the most interesting
Yeah.
stories to follow him in the league. It's going to be fascinating.
And I will say I did celebrate when I heard Amorim was going, because first he's going to Manchester United, that's my one team, and then Porto now finally have a chance, and then obviously what happened at the weekend, so that's a bit of a dent in the ego for
Yeah,
you.
up until Sunday night, it was a great week for you.
It was. I was so happy, and then yeah.
All right, well let's talk football. Let's talk football then, because obviously we'll start with the sporting game, just as we're on sporting, obviously. An appropriately incredible game to end Amorim's tenure as sporting manager. I didn't think the Manchester City 4-1 could be topped. I mean, I don't think it quite topped that, but still it was just another incredible game they came from, if anybody's not aware. Sporting came from 2 goals down to win 4-2, including 2 stoppage time goals. From Conrad Harder. And in a way, I think let's start with Harder because you both touched on it. It was appropriate that he was the one to get the 2 goals. Victor Gyökeres didn't score in this game because we're talking about a passing of the baton in terms of Amorim and João Pereira, but also that in itself was almost symbolic of potentially what could be a passing of the baton between Gyökeres and Harder. Barney, I don't know. What did you think of those goals? What do you think of his performance? Because it was I think sporting fans would have looked at that game and taken even more kind of positives from his performance than they have done in the whole season, because he's looked decent and he's popped up with goals and he's looked good, but that particularly I think was a great moment for him.
Yeah, I think I liked how he I think the first one was my favorite, the way when he took it, like, it wasn't like a clear cut, didn't have like a load of space, but he made the little gap and he finished it well. I think the second one, I know a lot of people have talked on this podcast about Matthijs's decline for Braga, but it was he did hit it hard, but it was pretty close to the keeper. But I think what I liked about it was, well, it. Yeah, I think that was obviously a positive change that helped things along. I didn't know if I was going to go as bold as saying like I don't think there was a team in the world who probably would have stopped Sporting winning on the Amorim's last game. But I think that's maybe a bit too strong. But I think the point is, like, he's there was a real feeling, when they came out the second half that it almost felt inevitable, really, that they were going to come up. I mean, I also really like the changes Amorim made. I think it's it really feels only like Amorim's sporting team where a centre back substitution feels like it has a significant part in the game. Like bringing St. Just on for De Bast, and this is not the first time I feel like he's made early changes to the back three. But St. Just came on and helped things along with his a friend of the show, Kevin Fernandes, described him so well on Twitter. Like, it's like, well, you look at the things on paper and his injury record, this is a guy that you probably don't want in your books, but the quality he brings when he is playing, you cannot deny it. Like the speed, the pace, I just think he's immense. And obviously Inacio came on towards the end as well, and his passing sort of add things from the back line. Like the just it's obviously an Amorim system. Those are really key positions for building things up from the back. And I think, yeah, those changes helped it. But yeah, I think overall it was a good comeback. It was a really nice moment. A lot of the players really passionate, used to, like, in the celebrations, really meant something to them. But to give a bit of credit to Braga, they actually did quite well to get the lead, and Braga looked really impressive first half, and they looked like everything was going to go right for them. But then, yeah, the second half was just completely different.
Yeah, obviously fell away in the second half. And I think, Barney's right to say it almost did feel like a sort of fate that Sporting were going to win this game. But also, it was hard earned. Second half, they had to put on a big performance, which they did. I think for me, Andrew, I was thinking about who kind of epitomised, who embodied the win, really. It was Morten Hjulmand for me, the captain. I mean, it was just an incredible performance from him. Obviously, got a goal,
That
very
goal
important.
was amazing, yeah.
Fantastic goal and very important in the course of the game, obviously. Man of the match, the captain. But I mean, Hjulmand for me is just another example of, like, the situation at Sporting at the moment with the excellent scouting. A player brought in from abroad who fits the system perfectly and has really elevated that position. And for me, was the embodiment of everything Sporting have been over the last few years in this one game.
So, an interesting thing about a player like Hjulmand or Morita or various players, when they come in, they don't always look that good when they start off in the system. But somehow then they look like the best player in that position ever at some point. Like Hjulmand has been putting in these great performances. Morita, who I was very skeptical of, and I put my hands up, I was very skeptical of him. He's such a player now. When I watch him play, I'm like, where was this guy? But it's because
But
of this.
he was quite slow to develop as well,
He
because it wasn't,
was,
and with him, it wasn't even games. It was kind of months, you know.
It seemed like, oh, okay, maybe they didn't get this one right. And then of course they did, because they keep getting it right. So in this game, it is, I mean, I hate to use the cliche, but it was a tale of two halves. It was Braga really good in the first half. They were able to neutralize Gyökeres, the movement, the things that he does best. Horta is still their best player, and when he's playing well and when he's doing what he does so well, you can see how good they can be. I mean, he had to score both goals, but he is their most important player. We had this conversation last time I was on with Matteo, and the Braga supporter, and he had some great stuff to say about that, because it is very important for Braga that he play well, for them to play well. But then, you're 2-0 up, you go into the break. And then those changes, I think, were the changer. Like, Saint Just was great when he came on. I saw that tweet from Kevin. It was something like, availability is the best ability, or something like that, which is exactly right. You have to be available to make a difference. And when he is available, when he's on the pitch, he is very good. But it's just that, that really dreadful injury record. But in the second half, that equalizing goal from Hjulmand, once that second goal went in, it was like, okay, this is it. They're going to find it. They're going to get that winner. And by then, that was it. The train had left the station. They were going to win that game. They won it emphatically. Konrad Harder, we've seen flashes of him already. We've seen him sort of pop up with goals and assists here and there. He is the de facto replacement for Gyökeres. They're going to cash in and have a guy that's just as good eventually, probably. And then obviously Konrad Harder, one of those great names that someone that probably should be working in the adult film industry with, like Hugo Duro and David Guduli or something, but still a very good player. And I do enjoy watching him. Pedro Gonçalves got injured. So that's a big one. So I don't know how serious that is, but he's very important for how they play.
Well, I did quite like seeing Araújo move further forward and Jhonny Katamo coming on. Araújo is a like a obviously the general. I haven't seen too much of him this season, but like it looks like a really well. Like it feels better than Nuno Santos. Like definitely sort of more dangerous going forward. I don't know.
And
There's more of a.
another one that what Andrew was saying about he needs a few games to get into it, because his first couple of games he was a little bit off it, but then now we're just seeing him sort of grow and grow.
We saw Mourinho screaming at him. Do you remember that first or second game? Mourinho was all over him all game, and that was him saying, "If you just do what I say, trust me, it'll work." And there you go.
No, I think just these, and I think this obviously this is the key thing for the success in not only the league but in Europe as well, is that they have more players to call upon, and I mean they just they look better. I mean, maybe one negative that I mentioned, obviously St. Juice coming on, but the Bass, like that, it feels like there's been a couple of times now where there's been a slight defensive mishap. He's obviously very good on the ball, but it'd be interesting to see how he moves on with the new manager, because obviously I felt like Amorim wasn't afraid to sort of ship him off when if he wasn't enjoying his performance. So he's perhaps one who hasn't, maybe just needs more time, as we've just been saying about the other players.
Still a very young player, and obviously needs time to grow. Andrew, I do want to throw back to that conversation we had with Mateo, because it feels like a lot of the same issues kind of reared their head again for Braga. We know had the same conversations. I mean, obviously Horta scored, but Mateo, who I don't know whether this is harsh, but I feel like he should be saving at least one of those supporting goals. I mean, I'm not a goalkeeper, but that's how I felt. But it's just with having the same conversations about Braga as we were on that show sort of a couple of months later. Obviously they had that brief spell, 3 wins in a row in all competitions, and think good patch of form, and then they very poor draw, I thought, in the Europa League, excuse me, earlier in the week. And then this defeat, which on paper obviously a loss to Sporting is not, it's not the end of the world for even a club like Braga, but the manner of the loss as well, to take advantage of Sporting in the first half and go 2-0 up, and then basically to capitulate, I thought was I mean it's you have to say it's disappointing.
It definitely is. Carvajal is such an experienced coach, and when you're 2-0 up against the best team in the country, you need to find a better way to manage the game. They're going to keep having these issues, because I think there is an imbalance in the squad. The defenders, not great. Goalkeeper, he should have been gone. I mean, he's a very sort of flamboyant guy, but you also need to be able to save a shot every now and then. You know what I mean? So and he just doesn't have it. That last goal, especially, I know by then the game was won, but that's the kind of thing where, if you're a defender, you don't feel very confident doing anything if you know your goalkeeper is doing things like that and letting goals like that in. Yeah, they've got some things to figure out. Again, Ricardo Horta is the most important player, but they've got really good young players. They've got Roger Fernandez, who still impresses me every time I see him. He's such a young player, but he's finding consistency every game. Gabriel Martinez. So they have some good players. They have Ismael, I forgot his name, but he's had some
Garby.
good games. Garbi, that's it. There you go. Thank you. So they've got some good players. I think Carvajal probably needs to go. I think he's kind of just a steady Eddie that they've put in there to keep things going, but they're not really going to reach those heights, and it's going to be difficult for them because Santa Clara are having the season they're having, and maybe they keep it going, maybe they don't. But then Vitória, they're going to come back and find a vein of form, and then it becomes difficult for Braga if they're letting leads like this slip. Yes, it's Sporting, but you were in a good position, you should have done better.
I mean, if Braga do decide to move on from Carlos Carvalho, I have a great suggestion of a young Portuguese manager they could look to who achieved really great things with a small team called Arouca last season. He got them into Europe. Maybe they could look at Daniel Souza as
Seems like no one wants him. It seems like nobody wants him.
a
It's
I mean,
so.
I'm really I don't want to say I told you so, but I maintain I thought it was a bad idea to sack
Yeah, it
him,
was.
and I believe that if they'd stuck by him, given him time. To work with the team, that they'd be in a better position than they are now. That's what I believe. But anyway,
It's a real shame. Yeah, it is.
I think that was a real shame. I mean, Bonnie, I know you've not watched as much Braga as we had this season, but I mean, just on this game alone, were you surprised by how they played, or had you are you surprised by how they've played or the league position this season? Because obviously, it's not great.
Well, I mean, like I said, I was pleasantly surprised with the first half performance. It looked really good, and like Carvalho had set them up well, as we said. But I think it's there are issues in the squad that haven't really been addressed properly, and then it did feel like the recruitment this summer just didn't bring in enough quality, really. There's Garbi, we mentioned, is a young player, but and showed glimpses, but he's not quite ready to start, I feel like, or consistently. So yeah, I mean, it does make for an interesting season in terms of like what they will do going forward and how they where they will finish and what they look to do next. But it's been a it's a just a really strange decision from Braga that like and they're just yeah seem in a strange place.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's the right time for sort of speculative conversation about where Braga could go with if they were to change managers and what have you. But I do, I go back to it. I just do feel like Carvajal was a strange choice at the time. And if they were to let him go now, where do they even go next? Because there doesn't really seem like anything obvious, lined up. But yeah, I mean, alas, a disappointing result for them in the league. Let's move on though, because I know a lot of people will be listening to the show for, obviously to talk about the Clásico. And Andrew, I mean, it wasn't, we didn't want you to come on because Porto lost. We would have had you on anyway, of course. So we appreciate you at least taking the time to discuss the game as a whole. Again, for anyone who's not aware, the first Clásico of the season between Benfica and Porto ended with an emphatic 4-1 win for Benfica. I think most people, including myself, expected a closer scoreline than the one we got. I personally predicted sort of a score draw, maybe a 2-2, that kind of situation. I'll throw it to you first, Andrew, because I know you have a lot of thoughts on the game. But yeah, a tough one for Porto to take.
Yeah, very difficult. I mean, Benfica were by far the better team. It was a comprehensive win. Porto didn't really lay a glove on them. The first half, it was just they were bombarding the Porto goal. And yeah, they went into the break 1-1. Someone scored that goal, but it was very much against the run of play. It was sort of attack after attack, and they play really well. They look like they were really well drilled. Now Bruno Lage has been playing really good football. He's getting the best out of a lot of guys that struggled for form, guys that were on the bench. I thought Aljunas had a really good game. Di Maria keeps having good games, and the left back, I think it was
Herrera-ish.
Carreras, really good game as well. They just look like a much better team. And if I sort of had to guess who's going to go on a great run now, I look at that Benfica team and say, yeah, they might be the ones. As for Porto, really disappointing. They looked all over the place. It didn't look like they had any belief. They didn't have any ideas. Sure, they scored a goal, but every other part of the sort of the team, the way they were playing, they just it was so half-hearted. when I was watching the first half, I was worried. I thought that this could go, this could be 3-4, and then it ended up being 4. They were very poor. Vitor Bruno is showing his naivety in these big games. We saw it against Sporting, and yeah, Sporting was right at the beginning of the season and the best team in the league. Okay, sure, but he seems quite naive in that it seems like he doesn't know what to do. It seems like he's not sure how to, either stop attack after attack. I mean, he was being inundated with attacks. They were going right through the midfield. The midfield was really struggling, and the midfield has been a problem all season. Fabio Vieira is in there now, but it's not helping at all. There's an imbalance there. He needs to figure out how to fix that. And some big players just didn't show up, really. I think Galeno didn't really show up. I think the defense was very poor. Jalo and Perez have looked good in some games, but they didn't look good against Benfica. And I think it was more about Benfica being really, really good on the day, but Porto didn't do themselves any favors. And I'm a bit worried. I'm a bit worried because there's a lot of the season to go, and this is really the chance because we don't know what's going to happen with Sporting. João Pereira could go in and just lose every single game, so this is the time where you have to capitalize on that, and they didn't. They look terrible against Benfica.
Yeah, I just come back to you on that quickly because when I was sort of previewing the game, I mean, like I said, I hold my hands. I thought it was going to be a much closer game. But when I was looking at what might separate the two teams, I did think that Benfica had more players who were more experienced in the big games, whether that was the actual the Clásico or big games in other countries. And I think we did see that in terms of magic. Is that something you're kind of optimistic on, though? Is that something you think Vitor Bruno can improve, like will grow into the role? Because obviously he's been around Sergio Conceição for so long, and he's been around these big games. But I completely agree with you. It just seemed like he was the manager kind of caught in the headlights when things started to go against him. And the fact that he wasn't able to wrestle himself out of that situation, maybe not even to win the game, but even to just sort of stop the tide of relentless attacks and maybe shore it up and you walk away at a 2-1. And I think 2-1 is a very different result to 4-1. And something as small as that can make a difference.
I think experience does count for sure, but system counts a lot as well, and being able to convey your message and get belief into the players also counts, and that's what he needs to figure out. Sure, some of the players will get more experience, but there are quite a lot of players that are very experienced in their team. Internationals, they play for their international teams that have been around for a while. Yeah, still kind of young, but in football they're kind of experienced enough to be in these games. I do think this sits with Vitor Bruno because there's quite a few mistakes he made, and he just didn't react quick enough. He didn't make adjustments. You can't just sit there and watch your team just get played through every single time against a team with the quality of Benfica. I mean, that Benfica squad, sure, they were underperforming under Roger Schmidt, but they're a very good squad on paper. If you look player for player, there's really good players in there, and then you have a coach like Bruno Lage who knows how to set up a very attacking minded team in a very well structured way. So yeah, I think this does sit with Vitor Bruno. I think the players did what they could, but some of them just weren't able to show up, and I think there's a lack of belief. There was definitely a lack of belief in this game from them.
Yeah, certainly. Barney, we obviously watched and discussed Benfica an awful lot under Roger Schmidt. I think this might have been one of your first opportunities to really watch them this season under Bruno Lage. I mean, what did you make of the difference? Because I think it's the one thing that a lot of people have been saying is that it has looked remarkably different under Bruno Lage. And I think it was a great performance, obviously, to get a big win. But I think they've been performing well for quite a while under Bruno Lage, to give them credit.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm perhaps quite often simplified my criticism of Schmidt just to sort of just play players in their position, really, or play the in their best position. But Kostic playing in the 10, Alisson's looking great in midfield on that right hand side. I felt like he linked up well with Di Maria, and then the fullback positions. So Carreras is a player who wasn't really trusted under Schmidt, but is just was it 2 goals, 2 assists in the last 5 games. They're really attacking threat. That right hand side for Porto, Fabio Vieira, Martin Fernandes up against in for Martíkoglu and Carreras, that was always going to be a really, really hard day for them. So yeah, I've liked this new Benfica. I mean, I was sort of looking at the both of them, Porto and Benfica, well, not only did this feel more important to Benfica, I looked at the fact that in the Champions League large sort of rested bar, Di Maria Pavlidis against Bayern, and he changed the system a bit. Arguably because, I don't know, he surely would have had an eye on this game, and you know, because arguably securing the league position this year is perhaps more important than the Champions League, and you know, I feel like we're starting to see teams in Europe sort of. Because there's a new system, sort of. I mean, people are using it as an excuse for City losing to Sporting, but you know, there are games where you can sort of maybe be like, you know, we might lose this one. Let's lose it, because it. Yeah, I think it the for Benfica to finish above Porto this season is it's so important for Benfica to do that. You can look at, I think Benfica are basically like a year behind Porto in a way, because you know Porto have lost Pepe, Taremi, Evan Nilsson, and their manager, and this was always going to be a year finding themselves. But Benfica, although they've changed manager, they still have Otamendi, they still have Di Maria, and who are both probably going to be off at the end of next season. So the expectation for me was is well, the expectation is for more for Benfica to do well this year, and I think they certainly delivered it in this game. I think they're looking really strong under Large, and as Andrew said, they've got the potential to go on a big run now, which is at this point of season really key. I think it's all come together really well. And just the one player I want to shout out, Thomas Araújo in mid defence. He's probably been their most consistent player this season. I mean, Arda's come in and looked fantastic, obviously, but Thomas Araújo is just, yeah, to get himself into that team and then to stay there and to perform as well as he did. His assist was brilliant. Like, I really, really like him.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought him up, because he was by far the player that impressed me the most in this game. And I mean, I think, Andrew, you're right to say that it, systematically, like, the midfield is probably very important in why Porto lost the game. But in terms of sort of man for man individual performances, where the biggest difference was, I think it was in the back fours for each team. I mean, you look at, you know, for Porto, the centre backs I didn't think did particularly well. And Martin Fernandes on the right back, I actually wanted him to start. I would have preferred him to start Tchouaméni, just because it's, you know, for a young player, I think you do have to at a certain point play the big games. If you're going to be a big player for your team, if you're going to, which I know is what they hope he will be, you have to play big games at some point. But he, you know, he was obviously subbed off for Tchouaméni and didn't have his best game. And then Francisco Moura was, you know, it wasn't really, the conditions weren't really there for him to form at his best. But you counter that with the Benfica back four, and I think Bar and Otamendi were both very good themselves. But it was Araujo and Carreras who really stole the headlines, and both those players involved in goals. I mean, the ball through from Araujo, when he picks the ball up, brings it into midfield, plays the ball through, it's just wonderful. And it's incredible to see that he is the Benfica centre back who's really standing out ahead of Otamendi and António Silva. And you know, he was called up to the national team not that long ago, and I love to see it, because he's a player that I really like, and his rise has been very impressive.
His rise has been as emphatic as António Silva's kind of fall, in a way, because António Silva was so highly rated when he broke through, and you'd see him play and you'd think, well, yeah, this is a very good player for I think he was 18 or maybe just turned 18 when he broke through. But now, as the years go on, it's not looking as good, and Araujo has been really good. And just to go back to what we were saying about Martin Fernandes, he started against Sporting as well, so he trusts him. Or he puts him in there for a reason, but he is so young, and it's so difficult to perform in these big games, because you will target the youngest player. I mean, an 18-year-old, you're going to target him, you know, unless he's a ridiculous sort of like Messi type character, like someone that's good right from the beginning, and can just take that pressure. You're going to target him, and I think, yeah, he had a very difficult game.
Albert, can I just ask Andrew about Pepe and why he's been sort of dropped the last two games? In my mind, I feel like he's the sort of player that in big games sort of did okay, or like is obviously at that work rate. I feel like quite a, I don't know, I was surprised to not see him feature in this game.
Yeah, he's a very sort of up and down player. I mean, he has had more ups than downs recently, but he's always kind of been up and down. I think he wants to get Fabio Vieira in there, and you're kind of playing with four midfielders, but you're asking Fabio Vieira to play as a winger, so you lose that width, and you also lose that ability to carry the ball that Pepe has, and that sort of unpredictability. I mean, he can take on players when he's confident. He's one of the best at that, but he wants Fabio Vieira to be in the team. So you have that sort of creator, because he is the creator. I mean, Nico Gonzalez is in there, and I think he really likes Nico Gonzalez for the work rate that he brings, but he's not a chance creator. Yeah, he scored the odd goal and he's got a few assists, but he's not a guy. He's not a 10 that does that. He's not a guy that sort of takes a game by the scruff of the neck and just dictates the midfield. And then you've got Stoikiau and Varela, who are the more defensive-minded midfielders. So that I think that's why he's kept Pepe out. But Pepe's really good at making something out of nothing. He's always been really good at that. And yeah, he has some maybe issues with consistency. And I also think he's one of those where what is his best position? Because I'm the same as you, Barney. I think a player needs to play in his position to be the best he can be. But what is his position? Because he's been all over the place. I mean, he was a wing back once upon a time for Constancao. So I think that's probably affected him, that not having a position and having a run in the team for a long time in one position to sort of develop.
I want to ask you a similar question as well, Andrew, about Barella, actually, because I know that he's a player that, I mean, has a very a lot of potential, and I think was one of the hopes of Porto to be like a big signing and probably a big sell in the future. But I'm not sure entirely what his role is as well, because I think there's almost a reliance on him to be the most defensive of the midfielders. When I don't think that personally, that's really his game. I think he would possibly benefit from a real defensive midfielder alongside him, just to allow him a bit more freedom, perhaps.
So this is the thing. When he was still in Argentina, he was a defensive midfielder. So that's the position he played mostly. I think a defensive midfielder in Europe is a little bit different. He's more defensive. It's about defending more. I agree with you. I think he's more of a sort of deep eight that can sort of run with the ball, and he's got a good pass on him. You know, he's not like a Pirlo at passing, but he is a very good passer of the ball. He's very physical. He's very intense. I like him a lot still. I still like him, even when, you know, the team play badly or he doesn't have the best game. I just like his attitude. I like how he doesn't stop and he's always trying. I think he's got a lot of qualities. Also, he's still pretty young. I think he's 22, no, sorry, 23, maybe 24, something like that. So he's a young player in that position, because, you know, being a defensive midfielder is very difficult. There's not a lot of good ones out there, really. So I think he has the potential, but I think he probably is an eight, if you had to ask him, and that's probably easier for him to play. If we had to get a defensive midfielder in, I don't know where you're going to find one. The money, because Porto don't really have money like that at the moment, so they're going to have to keep going with the Stoikiau and Varela next to each other, just playing that double pivot and trying to make it work. But then what happens is you don't have the creativity.
Well, obviously a very difficult game for Porto and a very disappointing result for the fans, but we should say, of course, we don't have any Benfica representation on the podcast, which is a bit of a shame, but never mind. But a fantastic result for them, and a hugely important result as well, because you know they were so far behind in terms of points from the top of the table, and they were in real danger of falling further behind. I mean, them losing this game was much more damaging to their season than Porto losing this game. So a great win for them, and great work by Bruno Lage for a team that's looking in excellent form. And I completely agree with what you said at the top of this section, Andrew, that this looks like a team ready to really kick on. And I think you know they're on excellent form already, and their form doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon. So I think if you're a Benfica fan, you'll probably be very buoyed by this result and excited for the next few games. We should try and touch on, we've got two more games planned for this episode of the podcast, because there was another kind of deceptively big game in the league on the same day as the Clásico, and Ruben Amorim was getting the charge as a fifth place Vitória traveled to sixth place Santa Clara, and it was the Asturians who came out on top. It was a 1-0 win, which saw them leapfrog Vitória into fourth place. They also overtook Braga because of that result, which is pretty incredible. They had to work very hard for their goal. They dominated the game, I thought, but they didn't take the lead until the 80th minute, so it was a big moment for them. And Andrew, of course, important Santa Clara, but for a newly promoted club to be fourth place, you know, not after four games, not after five games, but after 11 games of the season, I think is a huge achievement. They've got a lot of talented players though, so I think perhaps for anyone who's watched them a few times this season, maybe this is not as big a surprise as it might seem.
Yeah, and it's fully deserved. Their position in the league is fully deserved. They've played really well. It's not like fluke games where they're just winning or
No.
they score one goal and they just defend. Like they play football and they play good football. They were so dominant against Vitória. They were definitely the better team. They could have scored some more goals. They created so many chances. They missed a
He even
penalty as
missed the
well.
penalty,
Yeah, they missed the penalty. Ricardinho came on at half time, and you could see sort of he made the difference. I think they, I mean, who knows how long this can go? Because we've seen this before, right? We've seen teams that come up and they have a good run, and then you get to sort of Christmas time, everyone's a bit tired. A lot of players have never done this before. They've never been that high up. The pressure, the game start to really sort of tally up, and then they fall away. I hope that doesn't happen. I think it's really great to have this kind of story, and Santa Clara is the sort of team that it's nice to happen to. It's to one of the island teams. It doesn't really happen very often for them. I think they deserve the win. They deserve the praise they're getting. And I'll just touch on Vitória a bit. That's it's a tough one for Cuiabá because he I still think he's doing a good job considering what he lost in the summer. I like him as a coach as well. I'd hate to see him sort of go off because I really want to see what he can do with this Vitória team with like a summer and another season and that sort of thing. But I think he's safe anyway for now because they're still doing pretty well. They're sixth. They're not too far from the the European places after this, excuse me. But he needs to figure out how to get out of these situations because he has had some sort of negative results where it just seems like the team don't know what to do. And Bruno Varela had a really good game. He had so many saves to make. I mean, he had to have a good game, right? Even though they lost, but he was really good, and he does that sometimes. He'll just have a blinder in goal, and yeah, he did that.
There's the one save. Forgive me, I can't remember the Santa Clara player, but from the bicycle kick,
Yes, what a
point blank
save.
range, incredible save. Yeah,
So
he
good. I
could.
mean,
I
he made
mean,
himself as big as possible. That's what you got to
yes,
do.
yeah,
Amazing.
a little bit of fortune, but fantastic save. Barney, I mean, we love a newly promoted team doing well in the league. It's a staple of this podcast. It's something we've dined out on for seasons gone by, and I think Santa Clara are really, really doing that at the moment. And there's a few little players that stand out that are really enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of respect for Vasco Matos. I love that they kept the system. I think he used to be Felipe Martins' old assistant, so there's similarities to Felipe Martins' success when he got promoted with it was Caspia, wasn't it? And then seeing what's happened with Santa Clara, with the 3-4-3. I like there's a lot. I like the left hand side. I like MT. I think it's Dodo. He was playing in sort of in the centre back position this game, and Matheus Pereira they signed from Vizela. I like that. So I like those players. But yeah, Gabriel Silva's obviously the one that catches the eye a lot as well. But it works quite well, and I think it's we see it happen occasionally, don't we? Like where like it seems to be like a system really works for a promoted team, and teams struggle with it, and that's what we're sort of seeing this year with Santa Clara. I was looking at Alisson Safira, right? Because he used to be at Vitória, didn't he? And I just feel it's. I look at Vitória and I feel like that is their position where they are lacking, and I'm not saying he would come in and do a better job than the players they've got, but that they have really struggled to find a striker. I mean, the last success was André Silva, wasn't it? And he left. It's been almost a year now since he's gone. So Vitória really light in attack, I feel, this year, even on the wings.
You've not been watching Nelson Oliveira, Barney. He's had some good
Well,
games. You've had some good games. Come on, give the old man a chance.
No, absolutely. Like he has done really well, but like he wasn't signed. I don't think he was signed
You
to
can't
be that.
rely. I think a team like that can't be relying on a player like that. I think that's the point.
And like, didn't he come when André Silva lost? So like he was, I don't think he was signed as the replacement, but as a bit more quality and depth. But they are a bit reliant on him, and the wide positions as well. You think of the wingers they've had over the years, it just doesn't. It's they're not at the same level. It feels like a really. I agree with Andrew because I think Ruud Borg is a good manager, and I think that they had such a good start to the season. Obviously, they've played a lot of games. We're starting to see the frailty of the squad and players being out and in the back line in particular. Fernandes seems to be quite a big loss, and so yeah, it is a bit. It feels like the squad's getting weaker and weaker, but they like and there's a good manager in Ruud Borg, and I think they yeah if they can get things. He needs to find an answer soon, basically, and he needs to find a. He seems to be persisting with that midfield, and it's a good midfield on paper. Handel, Samu, and Silva. It's the Yeah, the defense is starting to show their
Excellent on
issue.
paper.
Yeah, and it's
Yeah, I
the
really
def
like that midfield. I was literally just about to say that. Yeah, that's such a good midfield. It's just everywhere else. They just have to improve.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know where the answers are. We'll have to see if they are active in January, but the, more often than not, Vitória aren't that active. And it's perhaps a little worrying, I'd say, for Vitória, but really good for Santa Clara and potentially an opportunity to disrupt things.
And I mean, it's difficult for Vitória because obviously, they're losing players is just part of the nature of a club of their size. And obviously, they lost big players in the summer. I know they did sign, again, you have to forgive me, the winger from Nacional, who I think they hoped would kind of grow into to being an important player for them, who's had some good games but didn't make an impact in this one. And yeah, I mean, anything can happen in Portugal. I hope very much that Rui Borges is not anywhere close to any kind of rash decision from the Vitória board, because I agree this is not a disaster. I mean, Andrew, we had this conversation one of the times you were previously on about Vitória and how it was very likely that they were going to go through a sticky patch. You know, the squad is quite thin, they've got a lot of games, and I think there is a real genuine silver lining in the positive form in the Europa Conference League, which I don't think should be overlooked, and in some ways I think it has almost equal value to having good form in the league. I mean, it would be a real shame if they weren't to qualify for Europe from the league directly again. I think that's quite a long way off. But let's not forget that their success in the Europa Conference League will also contribute to an extra European place in the Portuguese league. So in a weird way, it could kind of help them out. So I still think there is a good season to be had for Vitória. It's going to be a long season. It's already been a very long season for them. They've got a long way to go. Maybe they do need some signings in the January transfer window to kind of sustain them. But yeah, let's not if the Vitória board are listening to listeners, let's not make any rash decisions anytime soon. Gents, should we quickly squeeze in one more game? And in fact, it's more of a kind of another managerial discussion, because Rio Ave beat Boavista 2-0 in Petit's first game in charge as Rio Ave manager. If you're surprised to hear that name mentioned on this podcast, you may have missed the news that Rio Ave sacked Luís Ferreira and replaced them with former Boavista manager Petit, who got a win in his first game in charge against his former club, and incredibly, Rio Ave's first away win. Do you know since when, guys? How far long it's been since Rio Ave last won away from home? March 2023, which is a
Oh,
pretty
wow.
incredible statistic. So
Jeez.
perhaps that managerial change has already been
Wow.
justified. But I mean, Andrew, my reaction to Luis Ferreira going was kind of a bit of surprise, because I do like him. Although I think, if I'm being fair, I mean, I don't want to sound like Evangelos Marinakis, but I do think they've kind of underperformed this season, considering what the players that they've brought in. And I think there has been investment, and I think they should be doing a bit better with the players they had. I mean, players need time to bed in, all that kind of stuff. But in the Portuguese league, they got a lot of good players on that team. I think they should be doing a bit better.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a surprise, but I think this is what we need to get used to with Rio Ave and this new sort of multi-club thing they're going towards.
Exactly, yeah,
I think there's going
exactly.
to be a lot more ruthlessness. I think there's big investment and they want to make it work. Edu's going to be in charge of the footballing vision across all the clubs, which is crazy to think. Edu, who's currently at Arsenal, and we're going to be watching Rio Ave, and he's made
He's going to
decisions
be at the Estádio dos Arcos very
so
soon, very
great.
soon.
I love it. I really do. It's such a great story, and I'm very interested to see what Rio Ave do. I was surprised to see Petit get the job, and of course, it had to be his first game against Boavista. You know, legend as a player and a manager at that club, and then he wins as well, just to really, you know, just to add to that. I think they have really good players. They should have been performing better, so I think the manager had to go. That's just how it goes, isn't it? But we'll see how Petit gets on, because he's also a bit of a mixed bag as a manager. I don't know if he's going to be able to find any real consistency, because he hasn't really in the past. I mean, he's had some good patches, and he had that really good that good run at Boavista, obviously. But we'll see. It's pretty cool to have him back in the league, because he's a legend of the league. You know, maybe not a big legend. He's not Simão Sabrosa or something like that, but he is a legend. I think they played really well in terms of they did everything they could to stay in the game, and then they took their chances. So that's playing well. It's a style of playing. It's not my favorite style of playing, but they did it. Boavista were all over them. Cristiano Bacci is still doing very well. And I think I'm trying to see what I can say about what this game reminded me of. It reminded me of a manager that's come in and he knows what to do to try and get a win, and he did it, and he needed it, and they needed it for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when I think about Petit Coming, I mean, the one thing I always felt with him in charge of Boavista was there was this feeling that he had potential as a manager to kind of exceed, because he was achieving above the resources he was given at Boavista. And perhaps there was always this feeling that maybe if he was given more resources, he could do something interesting with a club with more resources. And in some ways, Rio Ave is turning into that club in terms of the players that he's going to be given. So I think that's an interesting prospect for him as a manager. So yeah, it could be a very good move for him and for Rio Ave. Barney Clayton with an excellent goal, a player that we really like, and a player that I've watched a few times this season. And he might not do it every game, but he does it enough where he shows you that he can be a really, really useful player at this level in Portugal. And I thought it was a great solo goal, and yeah, he could be a real asset for that club.
Yeah, it felt like a smart pickup when they got him, and now with the multi-club ownership, you can't sort of help but think about what that next step would be. Probably is not going to be Forest, but it might be, Olympiacos potentially. But no, I think Luís Frias' issue was he did so well with a Rio Ave team who couldn't sign players who have the same players, and suddenly had too many players to work with. Perhaps as the opposite, but I think they have everything there. The squad looks so strong. I mean, to be honest, I was seeing the lineup for this game. I didn't really like the is it Tiknaz, the 20-year-old Turkish player? There's lots of players that I'm not familiar with. And so there's a big squad, but there's some real quality. Thiago Moraes is obviously a real pleasure to see him back in, obviously against his old club, and Brandon Aguilera, the guy on Open Forest, who looks good every time I've seen him. But yeah, I think as we all said, now it was important to get the result, and they did manage the game well. But Boavista, I can't wait to watch more of them, because they've seemed to be doing so well. I've probably written them off again at the beginning of the season. I've forgotten, but I've really enjoyed seeing like some of their youth players step up, and they just feel like, I don't know, it always feels like there's something at that club where they don't know when they're beat. They're just as in like, they always manage to pull it out of the bag somehow. There's always someone who steps up, and quite the opposite from Rio Ave. I recognize so many of their players because that's been their squad for a while now. But it's the youngsters coming through that have really caught my eye from watching the highlights when I've been off. But I'm really happy that they're doing as well as they are, despite
Just
losing this game.
to go back to the ownership thing, I mean, these are two teams that are in very different boats in terms of ownership. One in turmoil, in real turmoil. I mean, at least Gerard Lopez is in turmoil, which means Boavista is in a kind of turmoil, and they're doing very well considering what they're going through. And credit to the manager, Cristiano Bacci. I think he's doing a really good job at keeping the players motivated and energized, and they keep going. And then you have Rio Ave, where there's this kind of like promise now. There's this horizon that they're looking at, thinking, wow, we could really be something, with the right investment and the right decisions. And it just shows you two sides of the coin in this league, where Boavista are a very big historical club, and we don't know what's going to happen with them next season even. Whereas, we suspect if they do the right things, we could be talking about Rio Ave in European places, if things go well, because that's their ambition. And that's great to see in this league, because, obviously we know it's three teams and not much more.
I mean, Boavista do not know when to die, do they? They've
No.
just been fighting every season for like 3, 4, 5 seasons now. They've just been, I mean, it's an incredible, it's a credit to them as well, because, and I think it might have been with you that I had chatted about this, Andrew, but I mean, Boavista, for me, the thing that surprised me so much is about the fight that the players have, and the commitment, and the motivation, which is, to be honest, the last thing I thought they'd have with all the problems going on around them, which are well documented at that point. It's obviously not a win in this game for them, but a great season so far, and real positives to take for them. Gents, I think we'll leave it there. Lots of big topics discussed this episode. Barney, it's been great to have Barney back for his big return off paternity leave. And Andrew, of course, a huge thank you for joining us once again. There'll be a link in the description of this podcast where you can follow Andrew on Twitter and his Substack and all that good stuff. But yeah, I think we'll say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.